from the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the G and Ursula Show with G. Scott and Ursula Voitine.
Good morning, everybody. Did you guys survive our mini heat wave? Are you thrilled that we're going to have cooler temperatures today? I got to say, I am. Hello, everybody. G is off today. Jack Stein from Cairo Nights is my co-host again this morning. How are you doing, Jack?
I'm doing well, Ursula. Were you spicy yesterday? Were you feeling the spice,
as we like to say? Our listeners know I love this weather. I am so in my element when it's warm, warm, warm. But I was saying last night, as I kept flipping my pillow over and over, saying there is no cool side to this pillow, first of all. And then secondly, I had the fan blasting so hard that it was keeping me awake. But yeah. I'm glad that it's now going to be in the 70s. I used to be an 80s and 90s kind of gal. I'm kind of getting into the point of mid-70s is good.
Yeah. It's like bell bottoms and perms and that kind of thing going.
Hey, I love those days too. Yeah. Okay, so still ahead on today's show, we want to know, would you support women going on strike to protest the overturning of Roe v. Wade? So we're going to have that discussion in depth. And then also coming up at 9:47, we're going to let you in on a secret that could help you avoid the security lines at SeaTac Airport, and it's not going to cost you a cent. So you got to stick around for that. 888-973-5476 is our state roofing text line. And as always, we get started with our top stories of the morning brought to you by Economy Fence Center. And following the Supreme Court's monumental ruling overturning Roe v. Wade, Representative Pramila Jayapal is now floating the idea of a national women's strike.
In 1975, the women of Iceland went on strike for equal rights. 90% of women walked off their jobs and their homes, shutting down the entire country. 5 years later, Iceland elected their first female president, and today Iceland has the highest gender equality in the world. It is time to consider such a move here in the United States.
Okay, so during this news conference yesterday, Jayapal also called for an end to the filibuster so that Congress can finally pass legislation that would codify and expand access to abortion. The Senate has blocked these proposals because of the filibuster, which requires 60 votes to overcome it.
But we are dealing with a broken Senate where Jim Crow-era filibuster still exists, allowing a minority of senators representing a minority of all Americans to block legislation. So what we must do is to elect two more Democratic pro-choice senators who are willing to overturn the filibuster or, at minimum, carve out important exceptions to protect our rights.
And she's also joining Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in calling for judiciary hearings into the Supreme Court justices who testified during their confirmation hearings that they believed Roe v. Wade was settled law and an important legal precedent, but of course, then ended up overturning it. So I know there's a lot there, and I want to just start with your opinion. Should we have a national women's strike? Do you think that would be effective?
Yeah, I think that I
do. Okay, that was convincing.
Okay, well, the problem is that Americans, by and large, have been paralyzed and pacified in fear, and then by fear, and then also by media. So the idea that you would actually leave your job and strike with hundreds of thousands of other people is something that most, if not millions of people, is something that most Americans think is a fantasy and something that is unattainable. And so they go to keyboard warrioring, or they, you know, put something on Twitter, or they put something on Facebook. But then actually showing up and doing the difficult task of it is something that most Americans, I think, by and large, are just not interested in doing for a long period of time. They do it in Europe all of the time, but there's something about the American spirit that I think has just been withered, or maybe even compromised in some way, where no one believes that direct action or direct civil action will result in anything. And it's actually kind of sad, right, that people don't think that striking or you know, taking it to the streets has any power, when we see instances in, like, France as an example, where it most certainly does work. It's, you know what I mean, Ursula?
Yes,
like,
I do. And I am in that camp of feeling like it does seem like it is a fantasy. And
right.
To what end? I mean, that's what I said during Seattle's Morning News. So you are going to strike, how long, what does that strike look like? How do you pull it off at a time when we're dealing with an economy that in many aspects is struggling? Is that realistic? Are there other more effective things that we can do as women and just general population for anyone who's really unhappy with this? Are there other things other than a strike that would be much more effective? That, I guess, is my question. Before I would go to a national women's strike, which I would think like, okay, there would be other ramifications and other things that would be potentially harmful at this juncture. Why not try some of these other things? Like, is it time to abolish the filibuster? Should efforts be made to, you know, work on that? She talked about, you know, getting just two more senators, because what's the reason why the filibuster isn't going to happen right now, or abolishing it right now? There are two Democrats who are against it.
Right. Yeah. I just don't see, it's actually kind of sad to me, Ursula, that more people don't realize the power of community action. And I think maybe part of it comes from this idea that we've been so separated for so long and we live in our little homes and we're just like, please just leave me alone. I just want to be left alone, not realizing the power that comes from community. And if you are of the kind of person who believes that abortion is a right, to me, the ability to go to your neighbor and then go to a community organization meeting and saying that we are going to initiate a woman's strike in the pursuit of our quote unquote, you know, reproductive health care, that would be immensely powerful. But we just don't do that anymore. We have lost that. And now it's almost as if people have retreated into the digital space, so that they don't have to deal with the ramifications of what a strike actually means. Because a strike is kind of like, Ursula, you know, I was in a band. You know, I was like in a touring band. We went all around the country.
Yeah.
Being on a strike is kind of like being in a touring band where you're not really sure where you're going to sleep that night. You're not really sure where your food is going to be coming from. It's like a difficult and arduous process.
Yeah.
And you don't realize the benefit of it until you actually complete the full circle of it, if that makes sense.
I totally get it. Yeah, I absolutely hear you. And Chef kind of looked into it because Pramila Jayapal pointed out where it has worked, and then you also saw something else.
Yeah, I mean, in 2016 in Poland, legislators there were proposing a nationwide total ban on abortion. No exceptions whatsoever. No health of the mother, unviable fetus, etc. Women poured out in the streets in 2016. They left work. They flooded the downtown square in Warsaw, and the legislators reversed course. Now, this is a Supreme Court thing, right? We can't pressure legislators right now to do anything because there's a filibuster in place. But I think there's a lot of benefits to mass protest. One, you can call this trite, but it is cathartic, right? To show up in the streets and see thousands, if not millions, of other people who support your ideas and show solidarity with your beliefs. I think that's very important. I brought this up with my wife. Her first reaction, awesome. And to be very clear, you know, we had a miscarriage a couple years ago. And in a couple states in this country, I don't know if my wife would be allowed to have her miscarriage medically supervised. I don't know if she took medication for that, if she would end up under investigation. I don't know if she would end up dead if she took that medication and then it wasn't completed with the medication at home, and she was worried about going to the hospital and ending up in jail, right, and bleeding out on the floor. So this is very real stuff, and I think there are a lot of women out there that have private stories that they have not shared that would absolutely do this. And I don't think this is something where it's going to be a two-week, three-week thing if it ends up materializing, but something visible. I mean, for example, in Iceland, every year, I think it's in October, women leave work at 2:38 p.m. to protest the gender pay gap, right? Something similar like that. It's not going to be weeks on end, but something visible in public, I think, would be valuable.
See, and I think you bring up a good point, but the reason I think it works in a place like Iceland or Poland, people in Europe have better protections than we do in the United States. I mean, whether it comes to working conditions or whatever. So I think that there is that reluctance. But when you talk about who's willing to strike, teachers are willing to strike, or Boeing machinists are willing to strike. You know, if you have a, or obviously there are other professions that have unions. But if you have a very strong union, you feel like, I'm going to have that backing. I mean, think of those, what was the 200 concrete workers who went out for a long time because they had the backing. It eventually didn't work, ultimately. But again, the one comment I saw here, and I just got to bring this up because this is from 425. The only effective, quote unquote, strike for women would be a nookie strike. Sure, will work. Just no more nookie until we have full control over bodily autonomy. What do you think about that one?
Wow. The intimacy strike. All right.
I have a lot of problems with that. I'll just be honest with you. I have so many problems with that, Ursula. I can't even tell you. Try to keep it, you know, I'm going to keep it above board.
I wanted to throw that in there because I know there are some people going, well, what are we talking about when we're talking about a women's strike? Okay. Is everything on the table? That might be one of the more effective ones.
I think I might have to, you know, if that was a strike that took place, I think I might be a scab. You know what I mean? I think I might violate that strike.
You might be changing your mind real quick. Okay, so let's talk about the filibuster, though, because last week, former Vice President Mike Pence told Breitbart that it is time to enact a nationwide ban on abortion, and he vowed to take the defense of the unborn and the support for women in crisis pregnancy centers to every state in America. And former Republican National Chair Michael Steele tells MSNBC that Republicans don't actually need 60 votes in the Senate to make that happen. They're going to simply abolish the filibuster if they get control in November.
Senator Chris Murphy tweeted something to the effect that if Republicans are able to retake the House and the Senate, that they will pass a federal ban on abortion. Do you believe that would happen, Michael?
Yes, without doubt or hesitation. They'll set the marker. And if they have the House and the Senate, they absolutely
overturn the filibuster to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because it's in their base's interest to do so. So absolutely, a national ban on abortion will be one of the first pieces of legislation, probably next to impeaching Joe Biden.
So again, I want to go back to, rather than focusing on a strike by women, would it be a better move than to try to ensure that the Democrats keep power in November?
Yeah, I think I'm beginning to change my opinion. I thought that for sure the GOP was going to sweep in 2022 in November. But now I think that they kind of shot themselves in the foot with this, because nothing mobilizes suburban women like abortion and reproductive health, right? Like nothing does. And suburban women in particular is what swayed the last election, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that the GOP really made a misstep here by appointing a bunch of ideologues to the Supreme Court, because now people feel powerless. And when people feel powerless, they act, right? They react to in any way that they can to affect change. And I think that you're going to see huge voter turnout in November. I think it's going to be gargantuan, particularly from suburban or urban women who are saying, even women who say, I personally am against abortion, they might come out and vote for somebody solely on the basis of other women being able to have access to an abortion.
I actually think you're right. So let's talk about this other big story involving the Supreme Court and the decision to support that former Bremerton High School football coach who prayed on the 50-yard line after every game. So we're now learning that Justice Neil Gorsuch, who wrote for the majority, he needs a fact checker. In his opinion, he said that Coach Joseph Kennedy lost his job after offering, quote, a quiet personal prayer after the games. But Justice Sonia Sotomayor, in her dissenting opinion, pointed out Kennedy actually had a longstanding practice of doing his very visible prayers on the 50-yard line and would invite students and players to join him in the middle of the field. And she even included several photographs to make her point. So now we've learned that Kennedy has since moved to Florida, but he says he would return to Washington if he got his job back. Attorneys for the Bremerton School District say they're still assessing if the Supreme Court decision means that they will have to rehire him. The district's attorney says the school did handle all of this properly.
The school district here did just the right thing to respect and protect the rights of the kids and their parents.
So my question to you and to all of our listeners is, should he get his job back?
I think he should just enjoy his time in the sun as a quote-unquote patriot martyr who fought for his religious freedom. I think he should write a book, you know, go on Newsmax, go on the 700 Club. You know what I mean? Like, do the circuit, have a good time, you know, maybe go on Fox a couple of times. But I don't think that he should. If he wants to coach football somebody else, I think that that's
part,
fine.
Get his part-time job back, work really hard to get it back. It was very part-time, apparently.
Right. I mean, like, I think possibly for Coach Kennedy, the religious aspect was maybe more important than the football aspect, given that he was inviting the media to come and take pictures of him and like inviting senators to come and take pictures with him.
It's very private indeed.
Right. So like, you know, you invite me, 12 of my closest friends and all the media to come. Hey, I'm going to be at the, hey guys, after the game, I'm going to be at the 50-yard line praying in private. Are you guys going to be there? As you know, I just enjoy your money, guy. Enjoy your time. Enjoy making the media circuit. And I think that's the last we need to hear of Coach Kennedy, I think.
I am going to guess that that is the case. But again, he says that he would like the opportunity to come back. We'll have to bring this topic back because I want to ask you sometime during the show today. Have these rulings changed the way you look at the Supreme Court?
Yes.
I know, right? And I want to get, we're out of time for this segment, but I do want to get into that because I think for a lot of people, the viewpoint is starting with the leak over the summer, but maybe even before that. I mean, it has definitely changed. Okay, still ahead, we're going to do an audible here because we still have quite a few stories from our top stories. So we're going to talk about the latest fallout from that bench-clearing brawl involving the Mariners and the Angels because there is fallout, but there's also a really cool story as well. This is the G and Ursula Show. The G and Ursula Show. Happy Tuesday to all of you. G is off today. Jack Stein is in with me this morning. And coming up in What's New at 10, we will be dipping into the January 6th committee hearing. They're holding a special hearing today after getting some unexpected information. So we will dip into some of that later in the 10 o'clock hour. But right now we want to talk about the latest fallout from that bench-clearing brawl involving the Mariners and the Angels. So yesterday, after our show, Major League Baseball announced that 12 people in total are going to be facing punishment for their roles in that debacle. And it's that includes three M's players who are being suspended. So as I understand it, Jesse Winker is going to be out for 7 games.
Wow.
I know, 7. J.P. Crawford's going to get a 5-game suspension, and Julio Rodriguez is going to get 2. And then the remaining punishments go to the Angels, including, isn't it what their assistant coach?
Yeah, I think one of the guys that's storming the field alongside. Yeah.
Exactly. So, and if you remember, Jack, when we were talking to Seattle Mariners announcer Rick Riz yesterday, he said he doesn't even think that the teams have settled their score, and he thinks the next series is going
to
be interesting.
It turned out to be a mess. It turned out to be ugly, Ursula, and I don't believe it's over.
Okay, and I was like, I heard him say that, and I just I don't know. I mean, it was exciting while it happened, but I don't want this to be an ongoing beef. I mean, and look at if the Mariners were already, you know, just trying, they were on a great roll there, right?
Yeah, Ursula, can I ask you a personal question?
Yes,
I love personal questions.
Of course.
Have you ever gotten into a fight, like a physical fight? You ever just throw hands?
Only with my brother. And it was just, you know, I was one of 5 children, and we didn't have a ton of supervision growing up, I'll admit. And we were living in the Philippines, and we were all close in age, and my brother was spraying my Charlie. Do you remember Charlie perfume, anyone? It was my favorite It's Revlon. Charlie.
I'm going to have to look this
up. Okay, yeah. It's anyone my age is going to know exactly what. And he just decided he was going to start spraying my Charlie perfume everywhere. And I was so mad. So I started swinging. And then we got into this fight. It was terrible. And I ended up scraping his eye, like my fingernail gouged underneath his eye. And then when my dad got home, and my dad is this very strict German, my dad gets home and he looks at my brother and is like, what happened to you?
I got beat up on my sister.
No. And my brother said, you know what? I was playing soccer and I was trying to get a ball and he covered for me.
Wow.
Because he knew I was going to get in such huge trouble. So that's the only fight I've ever, physical fight I've ever, and that was probably.
You won, didn't you?
Well.
Yeah, you won.
I didn't want to win. It's only because he was holding back. My brother, may he rest in peace, was just a sweetheart, and it just never should have gotten to that. So I'm not into the physical fights, even though initially I was like, well, this was kind of, you know, cool to see. But really now I'm kind of thinking, yeah, you might say the M's have heart and you know, it really was the angel's fault for all of this. And then maybe that the punishment reflects that. But still, it's kind of poor sportsmanship all around for me.
Yeah, I still like my idea. I still think we should just let the two guys go at it for 30 seconds and then you pull them apart, just like how they do it in hockey. I think that I've said this to Stacey Jo Rost dozens of times whenever she comes on my show.
Uh-huh.
Baseball. Somebody, okay, and think about it like this as well. If I, Chef, let's just say you and I are like walking down the street and I see somebody that I don't like, maybe they're looking at me in a weird way, and then I take a hard object and throw it at their head as hard as I possibly can, and then it strikes them, I would go to prison, right? Presumably, I would be arrested for assault and potentially for attempted murder. But in the context of baseball, it's completely acceptable and it's part of the culture. That's what I don't understand. Like in the real world, you toss hands, you're going to get arrested. On a baseball diamond, you punch somebody in the face, you're going to get a 7-day suspension. It doesn't really make a lot of sense to me.
You can never know what's in a man's heart, Jack. You know, that one just got away from me. Whoops.
But is it, is it really part of baseball, though? I mean, I know about the yelling, you know, the coaches yelling, and, you know, I loved it when Lou Piniella used to, you know, kick the dust up on the...
You loved that? That was the most... He looked like a toddler to me, and I was 6 years old when I was watching that.
But when it comes to the whole, you know, fist fighting, yeah, and we talk about all the time how conflict resolution is such a problem these days that... People just don't know how to resolve problems without getting physical. And I guess so for me, this falls into that category. But I hear the music coming. We got to talk about something really cool, though. Something cool that happened. Because it's not just that brawl that has gone viral. There is a very cool story that is making national headlines right now. So after Jesse Winker was ejected from the game, a Mariners fan who goes by the Twitter handle Sophie Ballgame decided to brighten up his day by ordering him some food.
I'm imagining Wink just back in the clubhouse just licking his wounds. And so, you know, I was like, I'm going to send him a pizza.
Yeah, why not send him a pizza? So she told Mike Salk on Seattle Sports that she figured it was a long shot that he would even get that pizza.
I just went to DoorDash. I literally Googled the address to Angel Stadium. I thought, best case scenario, the DoorDash driver gets a free pizza because there's no way that this actually makes it to Wink. And yeah, I just found a pizza place that wasn't a chain and it just sent it.
And he thanked her. That post went viral on Twitter. And then hundreds of fans on Twitter ended up banding together to send tips to the DoorDash driver. I love this part of the story. And then he ended up with some much needed cash. And Chef, you said for him, it was like,
it was a life-changing experience. He has a 9-month-old baby at home and a wife. I think he's the sole income earner. Over 400 people sent him tips over Venmo. So, I mean, think about this. A Mariners fan in Arkansas sends a pizza to a Mariners player in Anaheim, and the delivery driver gets tips from all over the country. It's just beautiful.
See, now we need to focus more on stories like that, right, Jack?
Yeah, yeah. Positive. Uplifting.
Because I never asked
you. No fights.
Did you ever get into fights? Were you a fighter?
Yeah, like a month ago, I almost got into a fight with a guy.
Oh, no.
What happened? So bad. It's okay. So I was doing yoga and I was doing it.
It's the gateway sport to violence.
I know. And I'm zenned out and I'm blissed out. And then a group of boomers are walking down the path where I do yoga. And this boomer goes out of his way with his Dockers pants and his Fila shoes to step right on my yoga mat and then leave his foot there. He went clearly like 2.5, maybe 3 feet out of his way to step on my yoga mat and
like
survey the park that we were in. And I said, "Excuse me, sir. You are on my yoga mat." And then he turns and digs his foot into my yoga mat. And he looks at me. He goes, "Oh, sorry, I didn't notice you here." And I stood up. I was so heated. I was so mad. I'm not sure if it's the testosterone or the yoga. But so we exchanged words and then he apologized. But at that point, I was ready to toss. I was ready to go with like a 75-year-old man.
That sounds wow. So bad,
but. Yeah.
Isn't it ironic that it happened while you were in a zen moment doing yoga?
Well, because it was just so blatant, Ursula.
Yeah,
like, he was just so clearly being passive-aggressive with me. I think he didn't like the idea that I was so close to the path that the group was walking on, and so he wanted to show me through some kind of weird boomer lesson that I shouldn't
Would
have been there.
Would you stop emphasizing the boomer? You know, we got a lot of boomers who listen.
I'm a fan of most boomers, but not like those boomers. You know what I
gotcha.
Mean?
I gotcha. Okay, coming up, we are going to share a little secret. If you're planning a trip that's going to take you through SeaTac Airport, there is a way that you can skip the TSA line for free. Maybe you know about this, but if you don't, we're going to share that coming up next. This is the G and Ursula Show. Thank you so much for hanging out with us on the G and Ursula Show. So many people are traveling right now. If you have airport plans in your future and you dread the TSA lines, do you know that you can actually skip those lines for free at SeaTac? Did you know this, Jack?
I had no idea.
I didn't
either.
None. Okay. So, and every single time, and I do travel a lot, and every single time I get to SeaTac, I always ask myself, why haven't I signed up for one of these programs? Every single time. And then I start doing the math. I start looking at the line. I start thinking about the money. Every single time.
Because it takes planning and half your day to go set it up.
I know. That all said, though, there is a Sea Spot Saver program that allows you to register in advance for an appointment at TSA. So you have to be a little bit good about organization. So, and there are limited hours. So it's from 5 a.m. to 1 p.m., up to 72 hours before your flight, or you can do it even when you get to the airport. You can make an appointment with your airline destination and your flight number and contact info, and you're going to have a spot saved. So as many of you know, there are 5 TSA checkpoints at SeaTac. 2, 3, and 5 take reservations. So you have to sign up again in advance for up to 72 hours before your flight when you arrive, and it's at the ticketing level of the terminal. So if you don't know this, do this, because right now, so many people, G just told me that his flight has been canceled. So the reason he's not going to be here tomorrow is because his flight has been canceled again,
wow.
Which is a whole nother thing. But anything that you can do to take the stress out of traveling. And I hate waiting in lines. I hate waiting in lines. And somehow, inevitably, I always pick the worst TSA line. And then when it comes to, like, you know, they give you the choices of, okay, you know, pick one of these. And I start scoping it out. I'm like, oh, okay, there's no one here with young kids. There's no one here. This looks like a business line. Let me go here. Something happens, and I'm always waiting longer than I expect to be waiting. I don't know. Do you have any tips?
Yeah, I just show up at the airport like 3 hours in advance. I mean, I don't, you know what I mean? If my whole day is going to revolve around traveling, I'd like to have it be as stress-free as possible. And I mean, the other thing I do to speed up the what is it, when you have to take off your shoes and your belt and all that other stuff, I just put all that stuff in my bag way in advance. I notice people, they like wait until the very last minute, like right when they get to the front of the line, and all of a sudden they go, oh, I got to take my shoes off, and oh, I got to take my belt off. I do all that like right when I step foot in the line, and I will just walk through the line holding up my pants with socks on, just shuffling. Because like I'll just take care of it now, and then I just try to make it as seamless as I possibly can. You know, because I just, why show up at the airport an hour and a half before your flight leaves, and then there's 30 minutes of waiting in the pre-check or the security line. It's just a nightmare. So I want to go. I want to sit down. I wait patiently.
You are, you know, good.
Go on Reddit.
So yeah. Jack, has your flight ever showed up early? I'm just curious, because three and a half hours.
Never.
That is egregious. I remember reading something on social media the other day that said there are two types of people in this world. There are people that show up to the airport 3 hours early, and there are people that show up 5 minutes before their flight. Those people get married. Is that you and your wife?
Yeah, pretty much. So because when we missed a flight one time, we were supposed to go to Austin, and we showed up, and it was like 50 minutes before the flight was going to leave, and they were like, you're not going to make it. You're not going to make it through the gate. And I thought, well, can we try? And they said, no, there's no way. You got to wait for the next flight. I said, when is the next flight? They said, it's 8 hours from now.
Oh.
So, yeah. So I'm, ever since that moment, I thought to myself, I'm going to do everything that I can in my power to make every single flight every single time.
The fact that I've only missed one flight in my entire life, but yet I have those recurring dreams of missing flights, there's something very telling, and I need to have a psychologist tell me what that's all about. And it's probably because in my life, I'm that person who I'd never give myself enough time. Even when I was going to meet a friend over the weekend for lunch, brunch at 11 o'clock down in South Center, I gave myself 35 minutes, which on a perfect day, that would be great. But, you know, inevitably there is a traffic jam somewhere, and then I get that extra stress. And, that applies on flights as well. And I know what it's like. I have felt it when your name is the one that they're saying on the intercom. Like, you're the last one. I made the mistake one time of reading. I've shared this before, but of reading the gate number as I had two things switched. And so I was at the wrong gate. And suddenly I hear my name, and it's like not the gate I'm at. And they're like, you know, looking for passenger, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, and I am booking. And of course, this is the one time I don't have my rolling luggage. So I'm like lugging these giant suitcases, trying to carry them and run at the same time. I made it.
Ursula.
I made it. But that was like more stress. That's why I look at you and I marvel that you are there 3 hours beforehand, because you'll never have to endure what I have endured.
You should be the voice of SeaTac. I'm saying it here on your show. I think that they should pre-record you saying everything that they say over the intercom. I think that you need to be, because the robot lady that they have right now is not very appealing. Oh. I think that you would be great at it.
I would love it. I would love it. And I would say, don't do what I do. Plan ahead.
But at the airport, you can be like, I wonder who that is to people. They're like, I love that voice.
I love it. Okay, what's new at 10 is coming up. This is the G and Ursula Show.